So then we move to Galatians chapter 2. And we begin then, after 14 years, I went up to Jerusalem with Barnabas, taking Titus along also. And so we have this moment at which he is going up to Jerusalem. And in Galatians chapter 2, we're going to see two different things contrasted. On one hand, we see St. Paul going up to Jerusalem to visit with the apostles there. And then in the second half of this chapter, we're going to see Simon Peter, or Cephas, coming to Antioch to visit with the Gentile Christians there. So we have St. Paul going to see the Jewish Christian community in Jerusalem. Later, Peter would go to visit the Gentile Christian community in Antioch. And Antioch is along the Mediterranean in the northern part of Israel, kind of north and west of Jerusalem. But that would have been considered a Gentile territory, not Jewish territory. So you'd have Gentile Christians there. So St. Paul goes to Jerusalem. He brings Barnabas, who is a Jewish Christian, a Christian of Jewish origin, and he also brings Titus. And Titus is a Christian, but a Christian of Gentile origin. So he's bringing one of the Gentile converts to Christianity with him. And then he says, verse 2, I went up in accord with a revelation. And this is an important moment, that St. Paul is not doing this on his own. He's not doing this because of some political motive or whatever. He's been prompted by a revelation of God to do this, that this is an important moment for him. And so this, by using that expression, it's clear for St. Paul then that this is something that the Holy Spirit has prompted him to do. This has come, again, by a grace of God that he should do this. He went up to Jerusalem, and by this revelation, then he presented to them in Jerusalem the gospel that he preaches to the Gentiles. Verse 2, it says, but privately to those of reputation, so that I might not be running or have run in vain. And in this expression, St. Paul is walking a very fine line. He is going up to speak to them about the gospel that he preaches. He presents it to the people who are the leaders of the church in Jerusalem. And he does this not because he's asking for them to tell him that he's seeking their authority to preach the gospel. He's presenting it to them as he preaches it, as he has received it from God, to make sure that it is an authentic gospel. So it's just asking, you might say, for their confirmation of the gospel that he preaches, to make sure that what he's doing is not somehow contradictory, or that it's not contrary to the work of the church, or contrary to Jesus Christ. So that the effort that he's making, so that he might not be running or have run, in other words, that what he is doing and what he has done, he wants to make sure that is not in vain. So he's presenting it to them from a position of strength. He has a sense of confidence in the Gospels and in the Gospel that he preaches, and then he's asking for them to approve and affirm this Gospel as well. And verse 3, it says, moreover, not even Titus, who was with me, although he was a Greek, was compelled to be circumcised. And so this is a proof that St. Paul is using that his gospel was accepted in Jerusalem, meaning his gospel in which he was teaching the Gentiles, that they did not have to practice the Mosaic law. They were not bound to follow all of the requirements of the Old Testament law in order to believe in Jesus Christ. And the proof of that is that St. Paul brought an uncircumcised Gentile Christian, Titus, brought him to Jerusalem, and he was accepted by the community in Jerusalem, and they did not make him become circumcised. So that right there is just an act of proof that if they would accept him in Jerusalem, then that is an approval of the Christianity, the message of the gospel that St. Paul is preaching among the Gentiles. But then, verse 4, we realize that not everything is as happy or accepting as it first seems. Verse 4, but because of the false brothers secretly brought in, who slipped in to spy on our freedom that we have in Jesus Christ, that they might enslave us, to them we did not submit even for a moment, so that the truth of the gospel might remain intact for you. And so for St. Paul, we see this experience he has of some people who did not agree. In other words, there were people who came in and who did not approve of what St. Paul was doing. And he refers to them as false brothers. That instead of allowing them to have that freedom in Jesus Christ, he refers to them as trying to enslave these Gentile Christians with the Mosaic Law, trying to bring them back into the Old Testament covenant. That St. Paul is preaching Christ who has paid the debt of sin, Christ who has freed us from sin. And so for St. Paul to try to bind the Gentile Christians to the Old Testament law, that would be like enslaving them. So St. Paul resists this vigorously. We see this at verse 5. He says, "We did not submit for even a moment, because to submit to this would be to compromise the gospel that St. Paul is preaching." And he wants, verse 5, he wants the truth of that gospel to remain intact, is that he is vigorously and uncompromisingly defending the truth of the gospel that he is preaching. When he speaks about this, he really uses these very strong terms, and it's might be worth mentioning that I'm sure the people who wanted to encourage the Gentiles to practice the Old Testament law, I'm sure that they did not see this as some horrid act. For them, they saw the practice of Judaism to be part of how they came to know God. And out of their relationship with God in the Old Testament, they then came to see Jesus as the fulfillment of those Old Testament promises. So for those who did practice Jewish customs and traditions, I'm sure that they saw this to be something that would be very consistent. And I'm sure that they weren't seeking to do harm. But for St. Paul, he saw that the effects of what they were doing were actually quite harmful indeed. Is that he saw this as a perversion of the gospel. And we'll make this clear as we see this contrast between this visit in Jerusalem and then also this instead the visit in Antioch, which is about to which is to come up. So here we have these false brothers who come in trying to hold the Gentiles to Jewish customs and traditions. St. Paul resists, and then verse 6, but from those who were reputed to be important. And then he adds this aside, what they once were makes no difference to me, because God shows no partiality. So again, St. Paul is walking this fine line. He's not concerned about human approval. But from the people who are the pillars of the community, those who are important, those of repute, they made St. Paul add nothing. They accepted the gospel that he preached as it was. And so even though there were some who tried to resist what St. Paul had done, the authorities in Jerusalem, the apostles, they did accept St. Paul, what he had done. And then verse 7, he goes on to show this kind of parallel between Peter and Paul, that there is a complementarity to these missions that are here. Verse 7, on the contrary, when they saw that I had been entrusted with the gospel to the uncircumcised, just as Peter to the circumcised, for the one who worked in Peter for an apostle to the circumcised worked also in me for the Gentiles. And when they recognized the grace bestowed upon me, James and Cephas and John, who were reputed to be pillars, gave me and Barnabas their right hands in friendship, in partnership, that we should go to the Gentiles and they to the circumcised. And so we have in these three verses just this very nicely arranged parallel structure that you have Peter, the apostle to the Jews, Paul, the apostle to the Gentiles. God, who was at work in Paul, going to the Gentile Christians, was also at work in Peter, going to the Jewish Christians. We have this sense of Peter and Paul each preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ, and in a sense, each entrusted with their own responsibilities, one to one group and the other to the other group. What this was an authorization, a recognition that God had given to Peter a special grace. God had given to Paul a special grace, and that this grace was recognized. It was accepted by the community in Jerusalem. And so then that really does leave Paul in that position as an apostle, a position of authority to preach and to teach this gospel that, in fact, had been accepted and had been approved in Jerusalem. Verse 10, only we were to be mindful of the poor, which is the very thing I was eager to do. Now, this is a little bit of an obscure passage, because what does it mean, the poor? Who are the poor? This is a very specific term. One of the things, when they went to Jerusalem, they had asked for these other Christian communities, is to remember the poor in Jerusalem, meaning the church in Jerusalem that at times had suffered specifically. And so what that means is to remember the poor. That means that they were asking the Gentile communities to take up a collection on behalf of the Christians in Jerusalem, the Christians in the Holy Land that is there. Now, that shows that from the very beginning of the church, we've been taking up collections. So that's with us today. It's a very long-standing practice. And it's interesting that St. Paul, he's perfectly happy to take up collections from the Gentiles and to send them to the Christians in Jerusalem. And it's more than just the bond of charity that is there, that they want to try to assist those who are in need. There is a sense of this recognition of the unity of the church in this act. Is that see what happens is that by the Gentiles by taking up a collection there, he's showing that the Gentile Christians are concerned with the church in Jerusalem. So there is a bond of unity. There is this bond of charity that ties them together. That it's all part of one church. But notice also that when the church in Jerusalem accepts this charity, when they accept this gift from the Gentile communities, there is a recognition on the part of the Jewish Christians in Jerusalem that they're accepting the Gentile Christians. By accepting their charity, they're accepting them as brothers and sisters in Christ. So again, there's a recognition. There's a kind of inherent recognition of the Gentile Christians as true Christians, as the gospel that they practice, as a true gospel. So that verse 10, that's a very important thing. It shows that acceptance, that all throughout this first part of Galatians 2, St. Paul has been faithful in announcing the gospel he preaches, and it has been fully accepted. Now, not by some, there are these false brothers, but all of those in that position of authority have accepted St. Paul. They've given him the hand of friendship. They have sent him out with that authority and approval, recognizing everything that he has done.